Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
So when I say that, there's another thing doing it. If you feel it,
oh, good shot there from Anthony Joshua, and Vladimir Klitschko took it. But Joshua's going for a big left hand, and down goes the giant Ukrainian in the same round that he lost his unbeaten record to Ross Purity. And can he get through it? A minute and a half left in the 11th. And Klitschko down for the second time in the fight. And this is Anthony Joshua's big
along to the Build Up on Balls.ie, our podcast in association with Ladbrokes. My name is Mark Farley. I'm joined by Mick McCarthy, as always. And you've just been listening to some brilliant memories there, some brilliant boxing memories, because this week we've got Jason Quigley on the line. Lots of people, you know, were caught up in nostalgia with sport not being on, but we have a bit of a special one this week because we've got Jason Quigley. He's going to talk us through his five favourite boxing matches of all time. And Mick, I had great fun. I don't know about you. Watching some of these back on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Like, I could watch Gaddy Ward all day, never mind any of the rest of them. But, like, actually, they all have their moments. They all have their reasons for being brilliant. I'm looking forward to hearing why Jay picked them all. But they're class. And what I actually like is, and it'd be interesting when we're talking to them in a few minutes, is, like, you know, four of them are, like, absolute wars. The thing that you kind of get into boxing for is, like, back and forth, who's going to do it. Like, you know, I love the pick of Ricky Hatton and Costa Zoo, because that was just, I remember that fight so well. I was like, that being a real proving ground for Hatton. And he kind of borderline retired a legend and left him sitting on a stool in the 11th round. You know what I mean? So there was something that, but then the other one is just, like, Barrera destroying Prince Nassim Hammett. And then there is also another thing that you might look for in a fight, and definitely a fighter more so than me and you would be, of just a complete masterclass. Of just kind of somebody going in and just picking somebody apart and just being doing everything right. Like, you know, so looking forward to this chat, I have to say. It's like, you know, I watch a lot of boxing, to be honest, over the course of like the year. But, you know, when everything disappears together, it's kind of like football and GEA you're thinking of, and rugby and different things. And you forget how much you're missing kind of more outskirts sports like boxing.
Just random things that'll take. They're like
the big night.
Things that you're not expecting or do that suddenly, like Klitschko, Joshua's probably going to, I know there's like the big build up to it and all that. And it's a massive fight, obviously, but it's not something like, I don't know, football or an Ireland final, whatever, that's guaranteed same time every year. Yeah. This is happening, and you're talking about it 9 months. You know, you're talking for a minute a final of football or hurling or soccer, whatever it is. You're talking about who's going to win the next one, or whatever. This is like, you're not guaranteed them.
Saturday night, are you going to get the fight? And you might and you might not. And then when you do, you're like, oh, brilliant. And you're watching all the build-up matches again on the Sunday morning that you didn't get up for the previous night. And there's nothing like it. But again, as you said, it's ad hoc and it kind of comes and goes. And you don't realize you've missed it because it wasn't every Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon or whatever. And now it's just like, Jesus, when I was watching these fights, the build-up to this conversation, I'm thinking, God, I kind of missed this too. You know, there's another bloody thing that's been taken away.
And probably as well, for people who might not be diehard boxing fans or whatever, and they may not have, you know, they might not have stayed up to watch the likes of, well, I was going to say, now Joshua Klitschko being on, and if it was on at a reasonable time, any of the American fights or whatever, that then the next, you know, the moment you're caught away, the next day you're catching up with it or whatever, or you suddenly, you know, that it kind of breaks through to you. And that's where all these fights are. These are the fights that caught everyone, Fairweather fan, the diehard fan, everybody, it absolutely captured the imagination. So, really look forward to chatting to them. We're also going to be playing our GAA All Ireland quiz is back this
Can't
week.
You
win the All Ireland final, although Peter's away. So, Donny Mahoney's going to play in his stead. If you haven't listened to them before, we'll talk about it in detail when we get to the GAA section later on. But it's a bit of fun. The two lads are going to go together, they're going to try and win the All Ireland Championship. Is it going to be football? Is it going to be hurling? What year is it going to be? All will be revealed later on. Yeah. And then, of course, we'll be playing Ladbrokes 1-2-3. Looking forward to some of the Bundesliga matches this weekend where you can win yourself €100 cash. Did you win €100 cash last weekend, Vic?
No, I didn't. I started off with the right margin in the Bayern game, but it wasn't the right score. And that kind of, I was a bit screwed. Now, I meant to ask our good friends at Ladbrokes, actually, but I didn't do it, so I'm an idiot, but I would be very surprised if anybody won the €100 last week because the score, like, with a 5-2 and a 5-0 in there, it's just unlikely. You know, I think we like loads of people win it every week. Normally, you're talking like 200 or something, but, you know, I'd be very surprised if somebody won it last week.
They were free to play, and this week we go again, and we'll be giving our picks, giving our advice, although I don't know if you should listen to us later on in the show. But I think we're going to jump straight into this today with Jason, because I'm really looking forward to it. Let's do it. Okay, we're delighted now to be joined by Jason Quigley on the line. He's going to tell us his top five favourite boxing matches of all time. Jason, how's it going?
Not so bad, lads, not so bad. I had good crack now watching back on a few of these fights again, sort of, because some of them have been a few years ago now, so I had to recap on a few of them as well. But no, I had some good watching again, going back over them. So looking forward to chatting with them.
Yeah, I really liked your list, actually, in that it's kind of like, I like that there's sort of like British fights and things that people might have watched on Sky Sports have been bigged up here, like the Joshua and Hatton and everything like that. And then also you kind of have like the Mexican battles and different things as well, like, you know, whereas and it's a real boxer's list, because I was looking at it thinking, oh, you know, he's going to be talking about Hagler and Hearns and all these, you know, that everybody kind of goes to, but now it's a little bit more modern, which is great, actually, you know.
Yeah,
I was going to say, maybe basically run us through your five and then tell us some of the things in them. Were you looking for just the most entertaining matches, or the ones maybe that you were looking at the left and last an impact on you? I think if people, anyone who's listened, regular listeners to the podcast will know, there'll be one that will pop up here that definitely had a lasting impact on you. But just quickly,
probably the one that I kind of, like, when everybody thinks of great fights, we're all thinking, like you said, Mick, you know, of all the Hagler, Hearns, Ali, Fraser, all these kind of stuff. But, like, I wasn't about at that stage. Like, I can't really relate to them too much. Like, you know what I mean? I just go on the ones that kind of had an impact on me and the kind of ones that have a lasting memory on me. And I was trying to think then of more recent ones as well. And probably one of the most recent ones that I think has kind of gone under the radar a wee bit was the Joshua and Klitschko one. Mm. Like, I think that fight was unbelievable, you know? And then we have Ricky Hatton and Costa Zoo. Like, Hatton was just such an entertainer, do you know what I mean? And the fight Costa Zoo, and, you know, the whole fight itself was just unbelievable. Then we had Corrales and Castillo. People mightn't be too sure of that, but those are two lads that just went hell for leather. Like, that was their first fight. Then, obviously, Gatti Ward, the first fight, absolutely legendary. And then, you know, top of the three, my favorite. The reason that I got into boxing was Pereira and Prince in the same.
Yeah, a lot of great, great fights there. Like, there's a couple there that would stick out, and I think it's in for the neutral, like we're talking about, in terms of Ward and Gatti, and even Corrales and Castillo. If you haven't seen it before, if you look it up on YouTube, the two of them that, like, you've got, they're both, I think, Gatti obviously goes down, and Gatti went down in the third, it was actually the third fight, wasn't he, that he went down and came back up and ended up winning it. Ward and Gatti, I think it was round, is that round nine was the famous round of it in the first fight?
The first round, yeah, round like.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Where Gatti's down on his knees and back up again.
And like, what I noticed about that fight was like, Ward would take some serious shots, and usually you would try and hide that you're hurt, or you would hide that you need to take a breath, whereas Ward took a few steps back and then he'd just go back and then like that was the thing, that it was just so raw, it was just so real, it was just so like, it was just pure heart determination, stubbornness and will to win, like that got him through those fights. And like, it was such a one-sided fight to drop over to the other side and be so one-sided then again on Ward's side, then on Gatti's side. Like, 1 minute you think Ward's going to stop him. Next minute you think Gatti's going to stop him. It was just, it would just have you on the edge of your seat. Like, it was, it's an unbelievable matchup. Like,
we spoke a few weeks ago about like Rocky films and stuff like that, and Mark was actually laughing and saying, like, you know, geez, they're so ridiculous, like lads will be killed or whatever. The Ward and Gatti fights, the one time I thought, it's like, Jesus, if this was in a film now, you'd be thinking, this is a bit much now. Like, how could one guy be so dominant and like the other guy so helpless? And then for it just to flip around, if you were watching it on a film, you'd be like, ah, come on now, he'd be defending himself a bit more, or he'd be dead by now, he'd be gone or whatever. I've never seen anything like it for real life.
100%, like, because there, I think as well though, nowadays, I think that the referees step in when they're meant to step in. Whereas back then, referees, unless you were lying on your back with your eyes closed, that was the only time they were going to stop a fight. And that's what I noticed about the Ward and Gatti fight. Like, there was times that fight would have been stopped long ago. And just a thought that's after coming to my head there, because I watched back on the highlights too of Joshua Klitschko. Like, Klitschko wasn't that out on his feet when whenever the referee came in to stop him. He was gone and he was out on his feet, but it was a wee bit premature maybe. Whereas if that was Ward and Gatti, like, Klitschko would still be punching today. Like, you know what I mean? It was crazy.
Exactly, yeah. For anyone who's not familiar with the tragedy, a lot of people might know Mickey Ward as well from the Fighter movie as well. It was obviously that as well, but the Gatti fights didn't feature in that. But the first one, so Ward had won Fight of the Year in 2001. He then, him and Gatti's first fight, won Fight of the Year in 2002. Their third fight in 2003 also won Fight of the Year. That ninth round that we were just talking about there, you know, if you're watching it back on YouTube, Emmanuel Stewart on commentary, it's one of those moments where the bell stops for the end of the round and there's just silence. And then Stewart just goes in, that should be the round of the century. And then in the third fight, he's like, I thought nothing could ever trump the first fight, but this is doing it. It's gone above and beyond.
And the thing about it that I didn't know, that in that second fight, Ward had turned 37 not long before that second fight. Like, 37 years of age. And I was looking at his shots, like, the snap, the power, and everything that he had in his shots was unbelievable for a 37-year-old. Like, do you know, whereas Gatti was such, you know, he had the tan, he had the looks, he had the bit of swagger in the ring, he had the style, you know, he was really just, he looked the part, like, whereas Ward was like, oh, come on, let's go. You know what I mean? It was just like pure raw. And I think that's what made that fight, was the two clashes of styles, because Gatti is such a boxer and such a beautiful, skillful boxer, where if he can do that, he'll beat Ward all day long. But it was the way that Ward dragged him into a fight, dragged him into a war, and the two of them just went hell for leather then. Like, that was what made it so special.
And then the other fight you mentioned there, you talk about coming back and, you know, ref stepping in or whatever it is, like Diego Corrales against Jose Luis Castillo in 2005. So if anyone has never seen this fight, Corrales wins it in round 10, having been knocked down twice in that round. So he gets knocked down twice. He goes over to the corner because he keeps taking out his gum shield, gets deducted a point, and his trainer's there going, right, you're just going to have to get into this, lad. And straight away then he goes just goes over and wins the fight.
Yeah, and that's Joe Goosen with the big flower shirt and a pair of jeans in the corner. You know, like, you got to get inside this guy now. Like, after a man being dropped twice, referee just ready to pull him out at any stage. That was another fight that could have easily have been stopped. But, like, that just shows the experience as well of Corrales, the way that he spit the gum shield out both times. He knew he was hurt, but he still had that awareness upstairs that, right, I'm hurt. I need an extra bit of time. How do I get it? Spit the gum shield out. And he did that. And that's that bit of awareness that he had then and that heart that he had to come back and start hitting Castillo with some serious heavy shots after that. Like, Castillo's thinking, all I have to do here is just run and hit him a jab. The referee's going to step in and stop this, or he's going to go down for a third time. But the snap and the power that Corrales had to rock Castillo that late on in that round after being down himself twice is just unbelievable. Like, it was like you couldn't even write that in a Rocky movie. Like,
yeah, it was that. I was thinking actually that when I was watching the Gatti one where early in that ninth round, we're talking about Gatti. You can see that he's hurt. You can see that he's winded, but he somehow manages to come back by not going down, not getting a break. Whereas the crowd thing you can see is like, this guy's taking out the mouth shield. He's going to buy himself. Yeah. Are you looking for them little things as a boxer as well, knowing exactly what they're up to? We might be looking and going, oh, look, he just needed to, we're struggling to breathe or whatever. Like, no, this lad's buying
time. No, like, it's. Those are the types of things that won fights. Like, those are the types of things that you pick up along your journey, you pick up along the way. And, you know, also, we'll not talk on it all now, but Barrera Naz, like, Barrera roughed him up, like, you know, just gave him real Mexican treatment, like, you know what I mean? And these are the types of things that get that psychological edge on your opponents in the fight. And there's nothing worse than you knocking a man down twice, him absolutely gone on his feet, but him just putting his hands up, walking forward at you and hitting you with everything that he's got again. Like, that stuff there that is just man made of steel. Like.
The three fights that are left on the thing all kind of share a similar theme for me anyway, and that, like, you know, fighters who make their name in Britain, be they Irish or British, you know, and on Sky Sports or whatever like that, they always get to a certain level and then it's like, right, how good really are they? You know, are they British title, European title, or are they genuine world title contenders? And then they have to go and prove that somewhere else. And, like, we know what happened to Naz, and he came up against, like, a real, real legend in Barrera, and that's your favourite fight, and we'll talk about that in a second. And we kind of know then that Klitschko might have been on the way out, and Joshua had that moment as well, where he became a world star by beating this legend in Klitschko. But Hatton's one, for me, was a real proven point in that he had a similar thing. He had the big British career, and then, you know, maybe he wasn't at the level of, like, two of the greats of all time in Mayweather and Pacquiao when he had to fight them. But, you know, he did fight this legend in Costa do Sul, who might have been just on the way out, but had to go and win that fight and win an absolute war. And he did kind of prove himself, and he did put himself on that level where he could have those massive two fights. Even if he wasn't quite at that level, he was a real contender. And that's because he did prove himself against a real legend, you know?
Like, Hatton was always such an entertainer. He had some amazing fights. He was relentless in his work rate. Like, Hatton would just keep coming all night long. And, like, he was even beyond Mexican style. Like, you know what I mean? He was such a ruthless fighter that He just was in your face all night long, and that's what proved his victory against Costa Zoo. Like, Costa Zoo was Costa Zoo had a brilliant stance. You know, he was so well balanced. His timing was just beautiful. Like, and he was catching Ricky with some lovely, clean, solid shots. And Ricky was taking them. He was hurt a few times, but Ricky took them and kept coming back. Ricky's accuracy early on in that fight wasn't great. You know, he was throwing punches. He was throwing a lot of punches in high volume, but none of them was really landing. None of them was taking a toll, but it was his work rate that mentally took its toll on Costa Zoo. And, like, last 9, 10, 11 rounds, and Costa Zoo didn't come out for the last round. Like, Ricky was just in his face. And you'd notice as well in Ricky's fights, like, he would lie in on your chest. Like, Ricky would just lie in on your chest, and he'd put his hands up here and block your face and your throat from breathing. And, like, these is all the wee sneaky tricks that you do in boxing. And if you watch Ricky Hatton do the pads with Billy Graham as well in some of his training videos, like, that's the way Ricky Hatton fought, the exact same way as he had done the pads. But Billy Graham had the big, massive body bag on him. And Ricky just used, like, Billy Graham used to be hanging over the ropes like this. Ricky used to be all out on top of him and whacking away. And that was exactly the way that he fought. And that's why he was so exciting, like, because he was just so relentless. He had some serious left hooks to the body. And he was and is able to get rocked himself. That's what makes fighters so exciting. Tommy Hearns is probably one of the most exciting fighters on the planet, because Tommy Hearns can knock you out with one shot, or he can get knocked out with one shot. Like, nobody knows what way a Tommy Hearns fight is going to go. It can go one way or the other. There's no real in-between with it. But Ricky Hatton really bust onto the scene whenever he styled Costa Zoo, like, relentless. Mm.
It's interesting then as well that all the four of the five you've picked have all come between, you know, 2000 to 2005, and then the only one the last decade gone by is the Joshua Klitschko one, then, which we had to wait till 2017 to get that.
Yeah, like, it's those are kind of the fights that I remember growing up as a kid, and they kind of probably got my appetite for boxing and fighting, yeah, and everything like that. There was those wars, like, staying up late at night to watch them. Obviously not too late for the Ricky fights, but, like, Ricky was a massive part. Like, Ricky Hatton, Jamie Moore, Alex Arthur, Wayne Alexander. Like, these are all the lads that I used to sit up on a Friday fight night on Sky. It used to be, like, those were the best nights ever. And the domestic fights on Sky Sports like, British title fights used to be unbelievable. Like, I think Amazing Alex Arthur and Michael Gomez was an absolute war. Mm. Like, there were so many domestic British level fights as well that are right up there with those fights, but it's because of the stature of the world champions, the titles on the line and everything like that there, that makes these fights just that little bit more above that level. But, you know, Joshua then is probably the fight that most recently that I remember, like, being on the edge of my seat. Like, it was all kind of one-way traffic up until the fifth round. Like, Joshua was just kind of cruising. Klitschko wasn't getting into it at all. And then next thing, Joshua has him all over the place. Klitschko's gone. Then Joshua's gone. Like, I was all up all over the place. Like, I was like, Jesus, I haven't felt this in a long time for a fight. Like, it was so, like, back and forth. And, like, I think that's what we have with all these fights, you know, is that kind of back and forth, one man hurt. Like, I'm a boxer. I know all the movements, all the strategies, all the inside fighting, this, that, whatever. But I'm the same as every other person out there. I just want to see a man being put down. I want to see him get back up and put the other man down. Like, that's just, like, that's just in you. I'm a fighting fan as well. Like, and that's what I want to see.
And it's also, you think you talk about some of the, what would you call it, inside boxing, some of the little tricks that were. Joshua said before, the round before that, he ended that fight, he had kind of taken it off. He was like, you know, I'm just going to get a breather here. And then at the end of the round, he was just going to Klitschko, next round, I'm going to whip your ass. And then there he goes and does it.
Yeah, like, because it looked like Joshua was spent. Like, you know, it looked like he was gone. And you seen, like, you can see as clear as day, Eddie Hearn just sitting ringside, like, no emotions, no nothing out of him. He was like, oh, no, like, this is all gone south here. And Joshua, like, that was the sign of a champion. That's what makes a champion. Whenever you can come through a punishment like that there from, of course, Klitschko was on the way out and he was nowhere near the man that he used to be. But still, he was such a giant at that weight. He was such, he was just such an animal, like, in physique-wise and everything, you know. I think if Klitschko wasn't as safe of a fighter, like, Klitschko's very safe. He just likes to keep everybody at long range. He likes to hit you with a jab and then a single backhand every now and then, tie you up, get back out to his distance again. If Klitschko was a more ruthless fighter, like the likes of Ruiz or a Tyson, that, you know, comes forward, puts the pressure on, he possibly could have got Joshua out of there in that fight. But Klitschko's such a clean boxer that he likes to pick his shots. He likes to hit you with that one single shot. And, you know, like, he hit Joshua with his best shots, took a lot out of Joshua, and Joshua came back. And as I says, that's the sign of the champion. And that's what made Joshua go on and be the Anthony Joshua that he is today.
Yeah.
And then you've saved the best for last, number one fight, your favorite of all time, yeah. Pereira and Hamid.
Can I just ask on this, Mark, before we go, Jay? We talked a bit about this before and how much this fight meant to you. The build-up to this fight, right? I know you're a massive Pereira man. Were you a Nas fan going over, or did you always want Pereira to beat him? It's kind of, I'm interested in the young Jason Quigley sitting up to watch this fight more than what it meant afterwards.
Yeah, I was never really a Nas fan. Like, yeah. I used to watch him and, like, well, he's flashy, he can bang and everything like that. But people that know me just know that that's not really my personality, and I wouldn't really, you know, blend in, or I wouldn't really communicate with that type of personality either. Like, looking at it now, I'm probably more accepting of Naz now than I would have been back when I was younger, because yeah. I'm like, I geez, fair play. They don't, like, he give it one hell of a go, like, you know what I mean? He had good fun and he just had a bit of crack with it. Whereas the more trying to do things right, me when I was younger and, you know, everything like that there, like, I was like, oh geez, what's he doing? Like, he's making an ass of himself, you know what I mean? But then we had the complete opposite in Barrera. Like, Barrera was just such a grounded fighter, and he just meant business. Like, and I remember the build-up to that fight. Like, it was all Naz. Like, Naz coming to America, this big puncher, Naz. Like, in that fight, everybody, all the commentators, the corner, even Emmanuel Stewart, all they spoke about was Naz's power, Naz's one-punch knockout. He never even really connected or hurt Barrera once throughout that fight. Maybe once he caught him clean and hurt him, but it wasn't really noticeable. But Barrera, numerous of times, kept catching Naz, putting him all over the place. I don't know whether he was really badly hurt or whether his style just makes him look so much off balance at times. But it was just, I think, that's what made it special to me too, was the complete different personalities. Like, you have this one lad that would just come up and shake your hand and be like, thank you very much, where you have this other boy that'd be like, here, give me everything, I deserve it all, you don't get a thanks, or do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That was just, it was just the two completely different styles and personality. But whenever it came down to the fight, like, you just seen Barrera, like, oh, like, it was unbelievable. Like, he just, everything that he did, like, whenever there was a break in the fight, Joe Cortez, the referee, broke them apart. And just as he says break, Naz kind of caught Barrera. It was, wouldn't really have said it, a cheap shot. But Barrera right away just clocked him back. like way after the break, like, and from that moment on, and it was the look, it was the way that Barrera looked at Naz, and Naz went over to touch his gloves, like, and say, "All right, sorry for that," and Barrera just shook. He's like, you know, just locking him down, staring him down, like. I just fell in love with Barrera at that time, like, because of his manner, like, and the way that he went about things, and, you know, you can just tell, I'm just so passionate about it, I just think it's freaking unreal. But it was the way that he manhandled Naz. It was unbelievable. Like, everything that Naz tried to do, Barrera just cancelled it out. He roughhoused him a few times, and the best part of the whole fight was whenever he rammed his head into the corner and he says to him in his ear, "Who's your daddy?" Like, that there is just, that's quality. Like,
were you able to watch the Morales the Barrera trilogy when at the time when it was on, or some of them
before? I never got to see any of them live. I have seen them, you know, recently because of YouTube and things like that there, but I wasn't up to watch them when they were live. But like Jesus, just unbelievable. I think it was the first fight Morales won but shouldn't have won. The second fight Barrera won but shouldn't have won. You know, like, they were just such great fights, like two absolute Mexican warriors and legends going at it. Yeah. And like the pride and passion that them lads had and the will to win was just, it's something else. Like,
yeah, it was great. It was their presence as well. It did kind of, for me anyway, it elevated lighter weight boxing to a kind of a more main event status. You know, it always isn't just middleweight and above, kind of from them point on. They didn't always have to be American superstars either. Like the Mexican guys, they were just so entertaining that they became stars all on their own.
Oh, definitely. Like, because what I've noticed as well in a few of the fights, like Naz predominantly fought in England, and he always had that. Naz is a confidence fighter, and he always had people around him and, you know, keeping him humble, but he also had that crowd and fan base that was, "Oh, Naz, you're amazing, you're this, you're that, you're everything." And he thrived off that. Like, he got another 2 feet taller every time somebody said he was brilliant. Like, he loved all that. And whenever he went to Vegas then, like, it's a completely different surrounding. It's a completely different atmosphere. Like, from soon as you go into the changing rooms, you're meeting all new referees, all new officials, all new commission with different rules that you would probably get away with in the UK and things like that there. They're just so strict. They're so intimidating if you've never been around that before. And that can throw people off, especially with Naz. At that time, he had left Brendan Ingle. He had Emmanuel Stewart in his corner, but Emmanuel Stewart just flew in maybe a week or so before the fight. Like, there was just so much unstableness around that camp for Naz as well that threw him off. And you have the likes of Ricky Hatton that beat Costa Zoo. Like, did the atmosphere in Manchester in the MAN Arena, did that give Ricky that extra 5% that he needed to go on and stop Costa Zoo? Whereas when Ricky travelled against who was the one of the first fights? I think it was wasn't Castillo? Was it that Castillo or that Corrales lad?
Castillo, I think he fought.
Juan Castillo, sure. Yeah. Or something. Yeah, yeah. Like, once Ricky kind of went outside of that there, like, I can't say it because Pacquiao and Mayweather are like two unbelievable fighters getting beat by them. You know, that's fine. Yeah. But, you know, once they kind of stepped outside of that, you know, home territory, the fans roaring and shouting behind them, you know, things changed. And the same for Joshua against Klitschko. Was the atmosphere for Joshua that helped him get through that that phase of where he was wrecked, he was tired, and he got that extra wind. And, you know, I think that it's massive, because then you seen Joshua that went to New York to fight Ruiz, and it was flat, like he couldn't get through those moments then. This is what we talk about then, at home advantage and things like that there. Like, it's just looking back on those fights now, like, you can see when you look kind of more into the psychological side of it and look deeper and try to dig out stuff about the fights and performances, you know, that's kind of then that you look at the home advantage and the crowd roaring you on. Like, some people will say, if a real scientific, facts-based person, they'll be like, oh, it doesn't matter what's going on outside the ring if you're taking care of what's inside the ring. But, you know, boxers are emotional human beings, and, you know, like gladiators, like, you know, we love the crowd roaring. We love to hear the roars and shouts. And when they're in your favor, even better. And when they're not, you try to prove them wrong. So it works either way too sometimes.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it was one of the things I noticed when you were like watching back all those fights, that the crowd were unbelievable in all of them. And with Ricky Hatton's, just as a neutral watching on, you're like, geez, the emotion after the fight finishes is kind of, look at, I had so much fun looking back over those fights on YouTube. You mentioned looking back as well, Jason. They were brilliant. And encourage anyone who's listening to look them up. And thanks a million, Jason, for joining us.
We could get a few new boxers after the YouTube's watched over the next few days.
Exactly.
Hope so.
It might be a bit too late for me, but someone else is listening to me.
I give them a rattle. There's plenty of white collar going on.
I'll sponsor that. Great.
Mark that versus...
Oh, brilliant.
Great stuff there from Jason. I think I'm going to be watching a few more fights back today as well.
Oh, man, I was going to say, I just talked myself into watching the entire Morales Barrera trilogy, and it wasn't even on the list. It's like,
but even, and more Gatti as well, because we're talking about the first match. There's a round. Gatti actually was knocked in the third fight. Come back and won it. There's so many different moments for them, and every round is just mental. So there's so much to look back at there. Lots of, like you're saying, it's one of those that gets, especially the crowd is so raw and everything, that it just sucks you right back into sport and what it was like.
Yeah, exactly what it was like back when there was crowds. So we're going to talk something in a minute about what it's like when there's fake crowds at a sporting event. But by the way, like, just like Mickey Ward and Gatti, right? Any of them, you're going to get your money's worth. If you've seen them all 5,000 times, watch any Mickey Ward fight.
Yeah.
That's actually unreal. You were mentioning that's his fights of the year.
I was going to say, even with the fighter, that, like, I was like, because it's been so long since I've seen the fighter, I was like, oh yeah, sure, everyone's going to know the Mickey Ward Gatti fight because of the fighter as well and everything. And then I realized, wait, no, they're not even in that.
Yeah.
The fights before that, there's talks of the fighter too, covering the Gatti trilogy as well. But like, that was sort of only one chapter in an incredible career to watch, like you're saying, watching any fight.
Yeah. One class thing about the fighter that I presume people know, but if you don't, it's a lovely little tidbit actually, is that they use, in the dramatization of the fights, they use the real commentary.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so you talk about, like, taking creative license, or we're talking about Rocky and everything like that. They actually had to make the fights quite realistic in the fighter because they're using, like, ESPN's actual commentary of the nights over there, like an ex-bot. Like, I don't know who was it. Like, it was Emmanuel Stewart. Or who was it? I'm not sure. I think maybe even like Sugar Ray Leonard or someone might have been on one of them, you know. And it's just, this is like, this is amazing. And I only really knew that when I actually went and watched the real fights, having seen the film.
The real fights, any Mickey Ward real fight, go and watch them. Go and watch The Fighter as well. It's a great movie. To play Ladbrokes 1-2-3, it's your chance to win €100 cash by correctly predicting the score. Three of this weekend's Bundesliga matches, seeing as there's no English football yet. And it's a bit of fun. It's absolutely free to play. If you one right, you win yourself a €1 free bet. If you get two, you win a €5 free bet. And if you get all three, you win €100 cash. Last week, Mick, as we were saying earlier on the show, that you doubt there were many people, or if anyone won the €100 cash, I wasn't a million mile away from the actual, I was in the right ballpark. I had the right ideas, but just nowhere near the right score. So I had Bayern beat Eintracht Frankfurt 4-1. They won 5-2. So 3-goal win the margin and both teams to score. Yeah. The Mainz against Leipzig. I said Leipzig are going to win that. They're going to win it well, even though it's away from home. They won 3-0. Oh, sorry, they won 5-0. I had gone 3-0. And then I went for a 1-1 draw on Cologne and Fortuna Dusseldorf, and it was 2-2. So it wasn't too bad. This week, I'm more confident.
Did I pick 2-2 here on the show? Because I thought I did, but then I went into my Ladbrokes account and I didn't have my €1 free bet. But I did do the picks at different times, so maybe I changed my mind. I think on the show I picked 2-2 in that game. But anyway, there you go.
This week, it's Bayern Munich against Fortuna Dusseldorf. It's Borussia Mönchengladbach against Union Berlin. And it's Paderborn against Dortmund. Right? Now, I'm going to give you a little tip here, Mick, before you make your picks. There have been, since then, we're recording this on Wednesday, so there's a couple of games happening Wednesday night as well. But so far, since Bundesliga has come back, there's been 22 games. How many times do you say the home team has won in those 22 games so far?
9? 3. Wow.
3 out of 22. And of those three, it's like Bayern Munich won once, Borussia Dortmund won once, and Hertha Berlin. Hertha Berlin was the only one where, like, you know, this wasn't a gimme or whatever. But it shows you that with the crowds, with the lack of crowds, you know, it's changing things up. I don't know what to go. I don't know what you can take from that, whether you want to, you know, that's going to play into your choices. But the games, well, they're also kind of a little bit one-sided on paper. So
do, yeah.
I'm going to go with my pick for Bayern Munich against Fortuna Dusseldorf. I'm going for a 5-0 win here.
Wow.
I'm confident. Yeah. It's going to be 5-0.
Yeah, I actually like the pick. I think that Bayern are just going to, like, after what they did last night against Dortmund, now it's just going to step on the gas. I think teams are going to really start tiring now, having, like, back to playing 3 games a week, having not played anything for so long. And I think winning is the thing that keep you going. A big squad is the thing that will keep you going as well. And Bayern have all that. I can see them just romping home for the rest of the year. They want to get this over and done with as quick as possible. And I think they'll do that. I'll go 4-0 if you go 5.
Speaking of 4-0, Borussia Mönchengladbach against Union Berlin, 4-0 for me. I'm going for big scores here, every one of them.
Yeah, I think Borussia Mönchengladbach are a team that aren't going to, like, I think like Dortmund, Mönchengladbach, these teams below Bayern might actually struggle to kind of keep it going for every game.
Yeah,
we're in such a weird position. They don't have as big squads, although they're a good team. I think these will be open games. I think there'll be a lot of goals in every game, but I can't see clean sheets for a lot of these teams. So I'll go 3-2 to Mönchengladbach. Paul O'Connell's team.
Mönchengladbach Werder Bremen game during the week was, like, one of the worst. Like, I don't know if that was football coming back. So, you know, I can stay away. Yeah. But Paderborn against Borussia Dortmund, that is the last one. I've made my pick already. I've made my selections on the Ladbrokes app already, so I can't change them now. I've gone for Borussia Dortmund 3-0 away from home here against Paderborn at bottom of the table. I think it probably should have went for more. Again, Paderborn, again, another thing I was thinking of is they're not playing until tonight. So Dortmund are going to have the extra day's rest as well, which will be important given that it's 3 games in the space of 7 days or 8 days.
Okay, but the other part I'll say to that is that Dortmund came back from the coronavirus break, let's call it, to beat Bayern and to go on and try and win the Bundesliga. They lost to Bayern. That's kind of gone now at 7 points. They're going to be in the Champions League. What are they playing for? You know, and I'm not saying they're not going to beat Paderborn, but I'm thinking that there's going to be a bit of a lack of motivation, I would say, for Haaland and his boys. I see the BBC describing Jadon Sancho as the next Messi, as the man to take up Messi's mantle yesterday. And you're thinking, an English player, getting carried away with an English player is a little bit unusual. Not something that the English media would generally do. But anyway, sorry.
You'd have to take that then on, you know, great, have to put enormous trust into that opinion.
I'll go for 3-1 for Dortmund in this game against Paderborn, which is a great name for a club.
Exactly, 3-1 for Dortmund. So I've gone 5-0, 4-0, 0-3. If you want to go home and away results, you're going with, what did you say?
4-0 to Bayern, 3-2 to Mönchengladbach, and 3-1 to Dortmund. 1-3, as you would say.
So there you go. You can play 1-2-3 on the Ladbrokes website yourself for absolutely free. And if you get it all right, you win yourself €100 cash. If you are having a bet on any of the football or indeed anything else this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly. You can visit dunlewy.net for more information. Up next, we're getting Donny Mahoney in, and himself and Mick are going to try and win the All-Ireland.
We're going to do it.
Danny Mahoney joins us now on the line as well. He's going to sit in PJ's place. PJ's off this week, or off today, so he's going to sit in and join Mick in our usual GAA quiz. It's back now. You're going to try and win the All-Ireland, lads. Danny, you've never played this before, but Mick, before this you've gotten with PJ, is the All-Ireland final. Do you think Donny's the secret ingredient that can help you go one step further?
Yeah, Donny's length and breadth of GAA knowledge is bordering on the bizarre, I would say. Like, I would say he probably wouldn't be able to tell you who won the All-Ireland last year, but we'll know who won the Leinster first round in 2012. So this is exactly his type of quiz, I think, you know.
Well,
Danny, is that insulting or a compliment? Because I think it might be both.
It's flattering. And did Kerry win the All-Ireland last year? I can't remember. But yeah, I find that the obscure knowledge, though, the obscure knowledge is there, but it's getting sort of like a lot of dust is going over that knowledge now, and I fear I've lost a lot of it. But look, what I like about this is I've got a solid partner, and we can talk it out together, and we'll figure this out. You know,
that's what we found actually in the few weeks now. Mark says it's our usual quiz, but we haven't had it in about 6 weeks, but we're back to it now, and what we found is that we can actually, we do sort of talk ourselves into the right answer. Mark is.
Yeah, sort of exactly. And as always, it's revealed on air, but what usually doesn't happen is that I get to the point of the podcast where I haven't actually accidentally given it away to either you or PJ. I have managed this week to keep it a secret, but there was a bit of a clairvoyant there in your discussion there, Mick, a second ago. We will get to that in just a moment. But first of all, I just want to close the book on the results of our greatest football moment in the 21st century, Gaelic football moment. It was our bracket in association with Ladbrokes. We talked about it the last couple of weeks in the podcast. We were lining up, we were ready for the final this time last week. It was Morris Fitzgerald against Owen Mulligan. Morris Fitzgerald, I can reveal, won that. If you've been looking at it, if you've been on site, you would know that, of course. He won with 58% of the vote. Donny, you weren't on the podcast last week, but you were heavily involved in the decision-making process. We were trying to cut it down to a 16-moment shortlist. Are you happy with the result? How is Morris a deserving winner?
I mean, it's definitely a deserving winner. My thoughts, am I right to say that both of those moments happened at the quarterfinal stage of the
championship? Yes. Yeah.
That just strikes me as unusual that, you know, that the two most defining moments of the decade so far are common at sort of stages that really weren't ultimately. That didn't decide all Ireland's, or you know, kind of probably might have been missed by a lot of people in real time. But yeah, you can't knock the point. So I guess now that Mick O'Dwyer was voted manager of the year, and Morris Fitzgerald has the defining or manager of whatever all time, and that Morris Fitz has the defining moment of the century, it's like. Do we have too much South Kerry readership on our side? I don't know if it's. I wonder. I would like. I think. Yeah. But fair play. What can you say? You can't knock that point. It was iconic.
Mick, we were kind of tossing and turning here last week, not knowing what to go with. Yeah. I think having watched back after we discussed it, I watched back the full Kerry Dublin game is actually on GAA now on YouTube, and I watched back those last few minutes of that game. And definitely, I think I probably didn't give Fitzgerald the credit he deserved in terms of, all right, maybe, you know, now we're saying, I was saying, like, looking back 19 years later, and you might remember the game or the result, or neither team went on to win the All-Ireland. But in that moment, Johnny Curley just kicked a bad wide. Kerry had been dominating, Dublin had come back to go a point up. Kerry's championship was over there, and he then decides to do that to the sideline. So, like, at that time, it was an incredible moment.
It was the calmness as well, where he just slowed everything down, sent the player away. I can't remember who it was, and was just like, I have this. I'll take this on. And that's what great players do, even when they're kind of past their prime and off the bench, and like Morris was that day. It's funny, I was talking, because we're doing, obviously, the Waterford 15 for 30 this year that you'll see on the podcast feed, and I was talking to Kieran O'Connor at WLR about John Milan, actually, and I was thinking about how, like, the point Milan got against Galway in a quarterfinal a few years ago in the last minute, and, you know, because he just took it on himself, because that's what great players do. And while I was saying it, I was thinking, that's what Morris Fitz is here. Morris Fitz is, like, the great player when the game is tied, took the ball at the end of the game and says, I'll do this. It's Michael Jordan, game six, etc. Yeah. You know, like there's all of these parallels really that we're all thinking about in terms of, we're all thinking about legacy so much at the moment with no actual sport on. And I think that's what defines it. And that's like, that's why it's such a great moment, is because it was such a great player. And that might, like for me, Mulligan was still more of a jump out of the seat moment, but you know, you have the last minute of it all, you know, that kind of makes it a bigger moment. To Donnie's point about it being quarterfinals rather than finals or whatever, if you're, what's a bigger moment is definitely the last minute of a game than sort of like something that happened during the game. And also, I think, you know, Donnie would have made a really big point for Gooch's goal against Mayo in 2004 being on the shortlist in general when we were having these arguments. And I suppose the point to that is when the great, great players do it, it does mean all that more and it does resonate all that more. And that's probably why Maurice Fitz got over the line in the end.
Yeah, definitely. If you missed any of the bracket in terms of what were the moments that made it to the final 16, we'll throw it up on Instagram again. You can look at the different rounds, see who beat who, and you can check it out there. That'll be on our Boss of the Instagram page later today. But it's time for our GAA quiz. And lads, like I mentioned, you're only finding out now what code this quiz is going to be, what year it's going to be. You're going to start out, if anybody's listening for the first time, Donnie and Mick are going to work as teams. I'm going to start asking questions. I start with a question about the preliminary round in the provincial championships of this specific code, specific year's championship. For everyone they get right, they move on around in the championship and they're going to try and win it. And lads, this week's is the 2012 All-Ireland Football Championship.
I had a feeling.
The random year I picked out of your arse there a minute ago.
Yes, genuinely I hadn't told you, lad. So Mick, just, it was complete coincidence with the fact that you said Donnie will know who won the preliminary round of the Leinster Football Championship in 2012. Unfortunately, lads, the first question is about the Ulster preliminary round of 2012. So I don't know, Donnie, is this... Though. Oh, do you?
Yeah, Donegal and Antrim? Or was that 11th?
Nope.
That was 11th, damn it. Okay.
That was 11th. Yeah, so yeah. Here we go. Are you ready, lads? So you can work in teams. Like I said, if you get one wrong before the quarterfinal stages, you will go into the back door and you get a chance to keep your hopes alive. The furthest we've ever gone is you've reached the All-Ireland Hurling Final. You fell yourself and Mick fell at the final stages of the last football championship one. Can you just go a couple of steps forward today? Question number one. Donegal beat Cavan in the 2012 Ulster preliminary round in what was Terry Hyland's first game in charge of the Breffni men after the previous manager had resigned following a disappointing league campaign. Who was that previous manager?
Can I just ask for a clarification?
Yeah.
So this manager, he only managed Cavan for the league and then Hyland came in? They had two managers in the same year?
They had two managers in the same year, but that's not saying that this manager only was a Cav manager for that National League campaign. He could have been okay. Manager the year.
Yeah.
Could have been.
If you say so. It sounds like it could be.
Like I thought. Okay, so I thought that Terry Hyland and Val Andrews were joint managers. I could have that wrong, and then Terry Hyland took over. Now, if I have this completely arseways, I do, but in light of a better answer. Mm-hmm. That's who I think it is. Do you have anyone better?
Nobody comes to mind. So I'm going to go. I'm going to back you.
Okay, let me just think for 2 seconds. Who else were cabin managers today? Tommy Carr was knocking around this time as well. Oh, it's Tommy Carr, isn't it? Mark, your poker face is way too good. Will you give the answer away? Oh, when was Tommy Carr cabin manager, Donny?
I didn't even know he was cabin manager.
He was very briefly cabin manager, I think. Maybe it might have been that year and a half. It could have ended badly in the sort of Mick Owen Clare kind of way. It was the last hurrah.
I could see him kind of giving. I think I can vaguely remember a story about Carr getting pushed out of cabin a bit early.
God.
A bit unceremoniously. Andrew's kind of a bit of a mercurial type, but
is it one of the two of them, Mark?
You're going to have to decide which one, lads. We're here all day. This is the first question. And
I thought Val Andrews and Terry Hyland were joint managers at one point.
I got to say, I like the sound of Carr.
Okay, let's go with Tom Carr. Mark.
Lads, you're out in the preliminary round. The right answer is Val Andrews. So... Hyland
were they joint managers though? Because if you do, then you've asked that question in a very misleading way.
Yeah, I was first match in charge as an individual. There were joint managers, then Andrews as manager on his own, with Hyland managing the 21 teams and been in the back room, and then Hyland was manager on his own after Andrews.
So Val was manager on his own for the league?
Yeah.
Okay, well then you probably did get away with it on technicality. Shit, anyway, why didn't I just go with my instinct?
Yeah, you go into the back door, and the way the back door works...
Was Tommy Carr manager?
He was manager before Andrews. Was Tony Kilgan in between? I don't think it was either Tony Kilgan, then Carr, then Andrews, or Carr, then Kilgan, then Andrews. I can't remember off the top of my head. But you go into the back door. The way the back door works, this is the first time we ever had to use it, is should you get the question about the qualifiers right, you would go back into the championship wherever you first exited. So you'll go back in at the quarterfinal stage of the provincial championship. So lads, your back door question, to get this is your lifeline. Who did Longford beat in the first round of the 2012 qualifiers?
Are the questions not supposed to get easier?
Derry.
Who are you going with, Mick?
Derry. They always beat Derry. They bet them three times.
Is that your final out, or is that...
Unless you want to different,
change your mind again.
You have a different answer, Danny.
Is there... I'm just trying to think of that year.
They bet Mayo the 2010.
Yeah.
I think. But Mayo obviously got to the All-Ireland final, so it wasn't them.
No.
I think it was Derry.
There wasn't any year where they would have beat... I kind of remember a Longford game against Cork or Kildare.
Cork got to the All-Ireland semis and Kildare got to the All-Ireland... I don't know about Kildare, actually.
Yeah, well, Kildare played... Yeah. I just remember a news talk commentary from McIntyre... And Kildare. I think Derry is the obvious. I don't know. Derry is the obvious one to go for.
Derry at least is an educated guess. They beat them three times.
Yeah.
Lads, you're back in the game.
Yes.
It was indeed Derry. It was in the middle of Longford. I think it was like their second or third year on that incredible run where they almost won 10 first round qualifiers in a row. Ruining their own chances of that record by actually going and beating me in the Leinster Championship in 2018. But yeah, you're back in. And speaking of the Leinster Championship, we're now back in at the quarterfinal stages of that Leinster Championship in 2012. And staying with the theme of managers, Louth lost to Dublin 2-22-12 in the Leinster Football Championship in 2012. It proved to be which Louth manager's final provincial game in charge of the Wee County?
So, the TD, Peter...
Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick. He would have stayed on after 2010 and been given another run around. Would he have lasted to 2012? Stayed on in 2011 after 2010.
Yeah, if it wouldn't have been a very long period in charge, which has happened in Louth, you know. In fairness, there's been a few kind of one-term managers, as far as I can remember. Aidan O'Rourke being the first one that jumps into mind, but I'm pretty sure that's way after this. It must be Fitzpatrick.
I think it's the best guess.
You are indeed right, lads. It's Peter Fitzpatrick. You'd also could have probably guessed it, given that the nature of the question, I wasn't going to completely screw you with a qualifying question about random Louth managers. So it is Peter Fitzpatrick. He had guided them to the Leinster final a couple years previous. But you're now on to the semi-final stages of the Provincial Football Championships of 2012. And this one is probably tricky enough. We'll see how you get on. I was expecting that I was saving the backdoor question for this one, but we'll see.
I suppose when you ask a cabin question, Mark, you just assume everybody's going to automatically know the answer.
Well, you did know the answer. You just have to tell everybody. Mayo beat Leitrim in one of the Connacht semi-finals in 2012. But who won the other match? Galway, Roscommon or Sligo?
Okay, so 2012 Connacht final was Mayo against...
Mayo won it because I think they won five in a row around this time.
Yeah.
It was in the middle of that. So what was... Sorry, actually, Mark, I was kind of daydreaming about Val Andrews and Tommy Carr while you asked the question. Which is Mayo beat Leitrim. Nobody's ever said before.
Mayo beat Leitrim in one of the Connacht semi-finals, but who won the other match? Galway, Roscommon or Sligo? Which is, as Danny said, in other words, who did Mayo play in the Munster final? But this is a semi-final question, so we're going to ask it the other way.
Okay, so Sligo won in 07, and I don't think they...
Yeah, there was definitely like I think Sligo were in the Connacht final maybe in like 2014 or 15 when, and they got totally destroyed. I don't know if, like, the obvious answer is Galway, but like it's probably too obvious.
Mayo, just in that time, Mayo bet, I think they bet nearly every team except for probably Leitrim in the Connacht final in that run. So it's like which year was which, and it was like obviously it wasn't the London year. Because they're not one of the clues.
Yeah.
This is so frustrating. Don't know the answer, is the truth. 2012. I remember the jersey. It was the Mayo jersey that they wore in the All Ireland final, which was the green, dark green one with the kind of the red kind of coming up from the corner in the bottom.
Yeah.
It didn't have a hoop. Just again, if that helps jog your memory of a Connacht final at all, I don't know.
Connacht final from that era. Tell me if you can remember it. There was Ray Moylett had won some kind of belt, and he was unveiled. He was sort of brought out of then to Kenny. I don't know if that was 2012 though, because the Olympics were on.
Ray Moylett's kind of big achievement was in 2010 or 2011 him and Joe Ward both won European golds. I remember. 2011, I think that was. Oh my god. I think it must have been. I feel like you remember Roscommon Connacht finals. I have a terrible feeling it's Sligo.
Yeah, Sligo is what my heart would say. I think, Roscommon seemed to win a lot of finals. And Sligo kind of fluke into them. I can't remember.
So what might have happened was Mayo might have beaten Galway in the first round, then Leitrim in the semi-final, and taking London and everything out of it. And what might have happened is that Sligo could have easily beaten Roscommon in the semi-final.
Yeah, London might be in there somewhere as well, but
not in the final because it's either Roscommon, Galway, or.
Yeah,
it could have been. Sligo 1-0-7, I'm pretty sure they got to one other kind of final, were absolutely hammered, and why not? Just, I also was like, why are you asking the question? If it's Galway, or even Roscommon, which makes me think it could be Sligo, but...
We know
they were in one of them, so... Hopefully we've talked ourselves into this answer and not out of it, but we'll go with Sligo.
Well, lads, you've all the different criteria wrong for why it's Sligo, but it was indeed Sligo. Sligo lost the 2012 Connacht final to Mayo by 12 points to 10, by 2 points.
So they weren't hammered.
After beating Galway in the semi-final, 2-14 to 15 points. But you got there in the end. I will remind you, though, that we do have a site to run, so if he's contrived to get these answers as quickly as possible.
It's funny, now that you kind of mentioned those things, I remember kind of Sligo having this really good team of that year. Charlie Harrison might have won an All-Star.
It was a good team, definitely. But so you're on to the provincial finals.
There we go.
You've reached the provincial final stages. You're getting there. You're scraping through, but you've gotten all well so far. This is a simple one. Who contested the Munster final 12 and who won the match?
So Kerry would have been one of the teams. And then
Cork. So the All-Ireland, Donegal beat Cork in the All-Ireland
quarter-final.
I think it was semi.
Yeah.
And they bet Kerry in the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
And Donegal won Ulster.
Yeah.
So Kerry definitely didn't win Munster. Cork must have.
That's right.
You get me?
I hear you. You're definitely right on that.
But did they beat Kerry earlier in the championship is a bigger question, I suppose. And then I'm just trying to think of the other quarterfinals.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's too early for that tip team. And then you're looking at
Limerick
or Clare. I feel like they're
It was Clare. Clare bet Limerick in the Clare bet Limerick in the brilliant match on a Saturday night. I think that was in the Kerry must have played Cork early. Oh, geez, I don't remember Cork beating Clare in the Munster final. Now I only ever remember Kerry beating them.
Yeah, I think. Well, if you, I do. I remember
these questions are so hard. Oh, when we say Kerry, like I actually, here's another thing. You kind of remember Kerry going on mad qualifier binges, like
yeah,
2009 or whatever. They must have only won one. I think they bet
Galway. Hold on, wasn't the year that Kerry and Tyrone played in Killarney? Was that 2012 as well?
Oh, it might have been. It might have been. And did they beat Galway then in the next round? Maybe they were in the qualifiers. Okay, well, we say Cork and Clare, and Cork won.
Yeah,
and
the only thing, yeah, let's do it just for the sake of
ask if it's Cork and Tip.
That's the correct answer is Cork beat Clare in the Munster final.
Yes!
You didn't pass yourselves out of it again. This would be an easy one given the mix of Clare fans.
I don't remember it. I remember it was the year they bet Limerick in the semi final.
By a point, yeah.
And it was some match. It was it was just this brilliant, brilliant, brilliant match. But I kind of don't remember what happened after that. Yeah, what was the score in the Munster final?
3-16 to 13 points.
Okay, that's probably why
they got well beaten. But it was indeed Cork. Congratulations, you're through to the All Ireland quarter final, lads.
Well done, Mick.
Danny, what a debut performance! You start, but you've gotten back to bits.
Mick's doing all the work. I'm just sort of confusing.
I don't know. I'm just talking myself into wrong answers constantly. You got the I wouldn't have gone for Sligo if you didn't. Yeah.
So anyway, quarterfinal
was massive, yeah.
I picked out two of the quarterfinal matches from that year: Dublin against Laois and Donegal against Kerry. Across both of those matches, three goals scored, and you just need to name one of the goal scorers.
Okay. So
what was the first match?
Dublin and Laois.
And Kerry Donegal.
Yeah, so I'll give you the clue in this. There was one goal scored in the Dublin Laois game, and there were two goals scored in the Donegal Kerry game.
I'm almost sure that Colin McFadden scored just because we were doing the Donegal 15 for 30 last week and I was looking at his 2012 season and I'm almost sure he scored in that match. Like I'd be 95% sure.
That would be my first guess. Also, I remember Kerry scored a late goal when maybe Donaghy or somebody came off the bench. So, like,
I think it was Donaghy, actually, yeah. Like, I think I only looked at this match the other day just on, like, Wikipedia just when I was doing some research on the Donegal team. So I actually think it was McFadden and Donaghy, but I'm more sure of McFadden and I haven't a clue about the Dublin match.
Sounds good. Let's go for it.
Okay.
For Colin McFadden?
Yeah.
Lads, you're through to the All-Ireland semi-final. Congratulations. Unbelievable stuff, lads. It was indeed Colin McFadden scored a goal, Kieran Donaghy scored a goal, and in the Dublin Laois game, Michael Darragh McCauley who got the goal for Dublin. I'm just looking up here. It was a game I forgot about because Dublin only won that big goal. So it was the MDMA goal that got them there. So they won 112 to 12 points.
Wow.
But anyway, it's through to the All-Ireland semi-final. What a time to be alive. So we're moving on. There's a lot of teams. This I thought we'll do the 2012 championship. That was class. Donegal winning it. What a championship. Then I realised that there weren't actually that many talking points from that championship aside from Donegal and Mayo. So a lot of the same counties are popping up with questions here. So in the semi-finals, Donegal beat Cork. And Mayo beat Dublin. One of these games had the highest total of points scored in that year's championship. Which one was it? Now, I mean points as in don't count goals. So it's just points alone, aggregate.
Total. I don't remember the Donegal Cork game at all. But I do remember the Dublin game was quite high scoring, I remember. But that's...
It could have been goals.
It could have been
that,
late.
Did it go to a replay? Or was that no. 2015 semi-final replay? Yeah.
Mayo would have gone up a lot early and then there was a sort of a fight back from Dublin and it ended up, you know, being quite close. But in the end, Mayo won by a point or two. I couldn't remember the Cork game at all.
I think it's the other match. I think there was no goals in it. I think it was like 22-18 or something like that. And I think that the trick of the question is remembering that there was a load of scores in the Mayo Dublin game. But I think I think Mayo got three goals in that game. Now I could be wrong. You're mixing up a lot of Dublin Mayo matches in your head when you start thinking like they played each other. geez, they played each other a lot of times, didn't they? They played each other 5 times in 6 years or something like that, and two of those matches went to replays, so they played each other 7 times in 6 years.
I guess that Cork team was had some a lot of players who could score, and that year Donegal kind of kicked it on with their own sort of scoring ability. So yeah, so like you could see 30 points between those two.
Yeah, okay.
So which we go with, lads?
Donegal and Cork.
Donegal and Cork, final answer.
Yeah.
Once again, you have fallen at the semi-final hurdle of the football championships, lads. Missed out on a final appearance again. It was indeed Dublin against Mayo. Mayo won 19 points to 16. The Donegal-Cork match ended up 16 points to 111. Unlucky, so what a performance.
Remember to complete the arseways. Like I said, Mayo getting 3 goals. What am I talking about? Like, is that 2015 semi-final? Oh, my God.
Can you give us the question for the final?
Question for the final would have been named 14 at the starting 15 for Donegal in the All-Ireland final.
Oh, I could do that, no problem. Well, go for it.
No. Go for the crack.
Durkin, Paddy McGrath, Neil McGee, Frank McGlynn, Eamon McGee, Carl Lacey, Anthony Thompson, Neil Gallagher, Rory Kavanagh. I'm going to get mixed up a little bit on the forwards then, but you have Leo McClune, Mark McHugh, Colin McFadden, Paddy McBrearty, Michael Murphy.
There's 14. Racer, Ryan Bradley was the other wing forward who have a great engine by you as well. So, you would have won the All-Ireland final, but look at you fell at the semi-final stage. Still, though, brilliant performance. Really thought this was going to be a disaster after going out in the first round of the Ulster Preliminary Championship. But you fought your way back through the back door. Well done, lads. Donnie, thanks very much for joining us this week.
No problem. Sorry, Mick.
That is it from us today. That is it. You can find us by searching The Build-Up on Balls City on all good podcasts. Absolutely. If you've not listened to the rest of the show and you're just listening to the GA part, be sure to listen to the full podcast. This week we talked to Jason Quigley. He tells us his 5 favourite boxing matches of all time. It's definitely worth a listen. But until we chat to you again next week, mind yourself.